We are going to have a guest preacher this morning, Brandon, and wanted to introduce him. But I got to tell you, I was on the mission trip and I realized I'd be coming back from vacation on a Friday and then would need to preach Sunday on Dr. Seuss. So I texted Brandon to see if he wanted to preach because I've heard him preach before. And he not only said he would, he said he would finish up the Dr. Seuss sermon series. So we're happy to have him. Brandon has a great singing voice. You can probably hear him as he inspires us all. He has been an annual conference delegate. Very smart and witty. If you talked with him for a little while, you'll know that. He's an editor at the Duluth News Tribune. He's a writer. If you are on Facebook, it's worth friending him because he writes some profound and wonderful, meaningful things. And the reason he got asked today is he preached this summer at Grace United Methodist Church in Michigan, and he made the mistake of posting a sermon, and I really liked it. So then I thought we should have him preach here, and isn't it okay every once in a while to have a male in the pulpit? So, Brandon, we are happy to have you here.
If that slide isn't proof that you shouldn't believe everything you read, well, I don't know what to tell you. Will you pray with me? Dear Lord, may the words of my mouth and the meditations of our hearts be acceptable in your sight today, our rock and our redeemer. Amen. Today we conclude a sermon series called The Gospel According to Dr. Seuss. Over the course of the last month, we have considered at McGilligot's pool that sometimes the fishing is more important than the catching. We have taken a look at a pair of scary-looking freestanding pants and asked them and ourselves, what was I scared of? We heard from Whoville with Horton about how a person's a person, no matter how small. And last Sunday, along with the Cat in the Hat, we learned about all the things we should not do when our mothers are out, and the value of confessing to our various hijinks. Today we travel to the faraway island of Salamisond, where Yertle the Turtle rules over a pond. I promise I'll knock off this speaking in meter, but first, let's consider the spiritual meat there. Yertle, unsatisfied by his relatively dubious throne on a rock at the end of the pond, decides to conscript some of the other non-regal turtles for a project. Standing on each other's backs, they elevate Yertle's perch to a point in which he can see several more prizes to claim as his domain. But unsatisfied by that, he conscripts several more turtles to extend his throne even higher into the sky. By this point, things have gotten rather heated at the bottom of the stack, where one of the lowliest turtles, a fellow by the name of Mac, has lodged some official complaints about the working conditions. However, Yertle is not interested in hearing from the little people and angrily puts Mac in his place. But as the moon begins to rise over this little pond, Yertle realizes that even atop dozens of turtles, he has not achieved the highest point in the universe. And just as he orders another round of stacking, Lowly Mac, either by choice or exhaustion, lets out a burp that disturbs the whole stack and sends Yertle flying overboard to meet his fate in the pond. And as the turtles disperse after regaining their freedom, Yertle the Turtle is king of the mud, as that is all he can see. Human nature tends toward building to the skies, too. It may have started at the Tower of Babel in the book of Genesis, but it continues today. Each of the 15 tallest habitable structures in the world today has been constructed inside the last 15 years. We live in a society that incentivizes building as big of a stack underneath our feet as we can while we can. What's in your stack? A retirement fund? a house, a car, some property with a nice view, maybe some responsibility at work. I know a lot about tenuous stacks. Just look at the dishes in my kitchen sink sometime. And no matter how sturdy we think we are, it takes only a little burp at the bottom to throw us from our perches down into the mud. Mansa Musa was king of the Mali Empire of West Africa in the 14th century and had assembled a legendary fortune responsible for roughly half of the world's production of gold and salt. And in 1324, he took that fortune on the road. He went on the Hajj, which is the pilgrimage to Mecca that is required of all able-bodied Muslims. He brought a caravan as long as the eye could see. The 60,000-strong entourage was said to include 1,000 attendants, 100 camels loaded with gold, plenty of the emperor's own personal musicians, and 500 slaves bearing gold staffs. He gave away so much gold on the way that he flooded the markets of Cairo, Medina, and Mecca, causing economic depressions that lasted for decades. And yet, I am willing to bet today is the first time you have ever heard of him. In fact, within two generations of his death, most of that wealth had nearly entirely disappeared. In Matthew 6, Jesus says, "Do not store up for yourselves treasures in heaven," or treasures, "Do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth where moths and vermin destroy, and where thieves break in and steal. But store up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where moths and vermin do not destroy, and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also." Those material blessings that God has given us do have value, but that value is expressed in how we can use them to benefit our communities and live out the good news. Yertle was able to command dozens of turtles to stand on each other's backs, but he used that power for his own self-aggrandizement, and he exploited the turtles that were below him. He is, by definition, a bully. In fact, there is significant evidence to suggest that the book Yertle the Turtle is in fact an allegory about Hitler, and that early drawings of Yertle included a mustache. The thing about bullies is that no amount of bullying satiates them. And that's the trouble with building on things of this world. You're never on stable ground, and you often have to hurt others to accomplish it. And yet, Jesus was able to command thousands of people to follow him and to build a church that has lasted for 2,000 years, not by the power of accumulation or the power of intimidation, but by the power of divine love. And he used that power for the glory of God and the salvation of humanity. Part of today's text is from the Beatitudes, or what is known as the Sermon on the Mount, from Matthew 5. Listen to the classes of people that Jesus claims God blesses. "Blessed are the poor in spirit. Blessed are those who mourn. Blessed are the meek. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness. Blessed are the merciful. Blessed are the pure in heart. Blessed are the peacemakers. Blessed are those who are persecuted for righteousness' sake. Blessed are you when others revile you and persecute you and utter all kinds of evil against you falsely on my account." Do any of those things sound like the way Yertle the Turtle was running his kingdom? In fact, it sounds to me like Jesus was talking about people like Mac, that downtrodden turtle at the bottom of the stack. I see nothing in Jesus' words blessing those who are the most prosperous. I see nothing in Jesus' words blessing those who have swagger. I see nothing in Jesus' words blessing those who have really nice cars. And so what is the reward that Jesus offers here? The kingdom of heaven. They shall be comforted. They shall inherit the earth. They shall be satisfied. They shall receive mercy. They shall be called children of God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called children of God. A long time ago, my campus pastor at Central Michigan University, a fellow by the name of Eric Stone, put a thought into my head. Start with the word kingdom. Drop the G out of the middle of it, and what do you get? Kingdom. The domain not of a king, but the domain of kin, of a family. There are hundreds upon hundreds of kingdoms that have come and gone, many of them so obscure as to merit little, if any, mention in the history books. Even some of Jesus' disciples desperately wanted him to overthrow Rome, restore the Jewish kingdom, and rule as a political leader. But Jesus offers us more than just to be subjects of a kingdom. Jesus offers us kingdom, that Jesus might claim us as his own. And what a claim that is. As we sang today, on Christ the solid rock I stand, all other ground is sinking sand. Now, I am not an engineer. I lived in a city with a prominent engineering school for 7 years, but I didn't get much of it by contact. But I know that foundations matter. For example, there are two very good reasons that the Leaning Tower of Pisa leans. First of all, Pisa is derived from a Greek word for marshland dating back to roughly 600 BC. The tower, which is designed to be a bell tower for the nearby cathedral, isn't the only thing in town that leans. Also, the cathedral and its baptistry are also sinking. The whole complex is built, literally, on sinking sand. Furthermore, this tower, which was designed to be 197 feet tall, or about 47 feet taller than this church, weighs 14,500 tons and was built on a foundation less than 10 feet deep. Whoops. The tower was closed to the public from 1990 to 2001 as engineers figured out how to avoid its imminent collapse. They finally did it with the help of several lead counterweights, the removal of about 70 tons of dirt underneath the higher side, and millions upon millions of dollars in engineering expertise. It was corrected from being about 5 degrees off vertical to being about 3.99 degrees off. And only now, in our lifetimes, this tower that was started in 1173 and completed in 1399, only now has this tower stopped moving. They didn't fix it all the way, because if they did that, who would go to the formerly Leaning Tower of Pisa? I'm guessing that none of the turtles that Yertl conscripted to build his throne had an engineering degree, as they would have told him that a tower of turtles is inherently unstable, no matter how happy they are with the process. I mean, have you ever played Jenga? All those blocks are exactly the same size, and somebody still loses every time. Nobody's ever beaten that game. I mean, he probably could have gotten away with two or three, maybe even four, if he'd employed the techniques you see people use to do those human pyramid stunts. But enough turtles to see the countryside was probably a disaster waiting to happen. But Yertle never was focused on foundations, was he? Every time he completed a phase of this project, he was focused on all of the things he could see that were around him, and even more destructively, the things he could see that were still beyond him. But that's how houses work. It doesn't really matter what is next to you or what is above you if what is below you isn't sound. Jesus said, "Therefore, everyone who hears these words of mine and puts them into practice is like a wise man who built his house on the rock. The rain came down, the streams rose, the winds blew and beat against that house, yet it did not fall, because it had its foundation on the rock. But everyone who hears these words of mine and does not put them into practice is like a foolish man who built his house on sand. The rain came down, the streams rose, and the winds blew and beat against that house, and it fell with a great crash." Jesus has laid the foundation for this place and this faith with his teachings, his example, and his very life, and no storm can shake that. All Mac had to do to free himself and the other turtles from Yertle's horrible project was one burp. That is not a very firm grasp on power. And as it was spoken in one of the greatest films of all time, Monty Python and the Holy Grail, "Supreme executive power derives from a mandate from the masses, not from some farcical aquatic ceremony." And even at the height of it, all Yertle possessed was a self-appointed rule over some turtles in a pond and maybe a bit of a nearby farm. And the only way he got those turtles to do his bidding was by coercion. Once again from Monty Python, "Come and see the violence inherent in the system! Come and see the violence inherent in the system!" That's not much to build on. And that's all our self-made stacks of things and responsibilities amount to. A couple of trinkets stacked on top of each other on a foundation of sand. Something burps, it tips over, is washed away, and we start over. Sometimes, several times a day, trying to reassemble what we want our worlds to look like. Like Yertle, we can try and assemble our kingdoms over and over again and choose to fall into the mud. Or we can be part of a kingdom that lasts eternally. But when we leave the building up to God, that cycle of futility is replaced with a sure foundation. And yes, there will be times when renovations need to be made. Things will need to be spruced up, fixed up, added on to. But the foundation that has been provided is sound. And the freedom of knowing that foundation is sound is a powerful thing indeed. To conclude the story, Dr. Seuss says, "And the turtles, of course, all the turtles are free, as turtles and maybe all creatures should be." All creatures should be free. And all people should be free, but from what? To do what? I mean, our political system has the definition of freedom, and that works within society for the most part. I can vote, I can say and I can write what I want in public without fear of official persecution, and so forth. But I'm not totally free. I have to concern myself with securing my daily needs, retaining my job, and comforting myself through social interaction and the accumulation of amusements. The freest form of free can only be found in that kingdom we talked about, a place where there is no sickness, no sadness, no want, a place where no one can bully us away from the gifts of God's grace. Maybe that is what we are all missing today. We are not and can never be totally free of the struggles of this life. Theodore Seuss, and that's how he pronounced it, Geisel, died nearly 27 years ago. He's famous for children's literature, almost all of which is 50 years old or more, and yet remains timeless. He had a hard job trying to produce books with educational value for young readers and still managing to include moral and ethical messages that resonate even with adults today. As he himself said to the New Yorker in a 1960 profile, "If a book pleases me, it has a chance of pleasing children." It is interesting to note that his books sold millions of copies, but he never fathered any children himself, saying, "You raise them, I'll entertain them." But there are some people out there, whether they draw it or play it or talk it out, that they just know how to make it stick. For all of the silly drawings and rhymings and tongue twisters, there's something essential there. Jesus preached to the people this way too. His parables had a lot less drawing and a lot less rhyming. But I think both of them realized that sometimes the fruit of instruction has to be drawn up through childhood. We deal with the problems Dr. Seuss wrote about every day, no matter what age we are. Because of all of the places we build foundations, the mind, the heart, and the soul are the most important of them all. Thanks be to God. Amen.